following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 29 for Monday, March 8th, 2010. Jennifer and the Kingston Pass-Through. Hello, everyone. Aaron and Rodney here yet again for another wonderful episode.
I wonder if people are getting bored with us.
Let's keep the negativity out of the podcast.
Okay. Everybody loves us.
No, we don't need to say that either. Oh. We just need to be professional about this and move along.
Okay.
Here for with...
Rain on my parade.
Here with more handfuls of stories.
Yes, and we will jump out with the typical Microsoft thing. It is going to be Microsoft Patch Tuesday again on March 9th. They are going to have a very light week of patches with... only 8 being repaired. Not like the February one where they fixed 26 particular bugs.
Yeah.
One in particular that's been making the news right now is the fact that if you are using Windows 2000, Server 2003, or Windows XP with Internet Explorer 6 and possibly 7 and 8, you could be vulnerable to a VB script issue that is affecting people if they are on a web page and the web page pops up and says, hey, press F1 for more help on how to use this web page or something like that.
Not on how to use Internet Explorer, but on how to use the web page itself.
Well, evidently the message varies, but mm-hmm. that's one of the common ones.
Okay.
How to use this web page, sort of trying to mm-hmm. sucker people into it. This is an exploit in VBScript, which is basically a markup language for Visual Basic that you can use in web pages. So if you run across this, you may want to avoid it, get away from the page, don't click F1 because it can install software, malware, spyware, keyloggers, all that kind of stuff.
Yuck.
On your system.
Okay.
They are not repairing this patch with Patch Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
They are just monitoring the situation right now.
So this does not affect people who use like Mozilla Firefox or any other browser. This is an exclusive Internet Explorer thing?
It is exclusive to Internet Explorer. Mm-hmm. And primarily it affects Internet Explorer 6, which they had a funeral for last week.
Yes, they brought flowers and cards and everything.
Yes, it was quite nice, I guess.
Touching.
But also in the security realm, there's a scam, go figure, going around on Facebook, of all things,
mm-hmm.
where people are being hoaxed into getting an iPad.
Facebook and Twitter.
Well,
also,
it's prevalent on Facebook right now, mm-hmm. but it has slowly started to spread to Twitter. The ads and web pages on Twitter will come up and say that you can become a beta tester for the Apple iPad and or win an iPad or get one free type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The web pages will ask you to become a fan of the page, ask you to recommend it to your friends, and then it will send you through a questionnaire type process where at the end to qualify for your gift or drawing, whatever it may be,
mm-hmm.
it will ask you for your cell phone number. And if you give them your cell phone number and click submit, they'll charge you anywhere from $10 to who knows how much. And it will be a reoccurring bill that you'll have popping up on your cell bill every month.
Oh my, that doesn't sound good at all.
So you very much have to be careful with it. There's other scams like that going around, but that's the prevalent one, seeing as how everyone's anxious for the iPad, which I believe
comes out in April.
I believe April 3rd, and in the next couple of weeks they're going to allow for pre-orders.
Mm-hmm. Switching gears a little bit, talking about security. This isn't necessarily a scam, but it's more a security and privacy issue. Google Buzz, which is Google's new social networking tool thingy that I'm still not quite sure what it all does, previous, when you first registered for it, they had a setting, we talked about this a few weeks ago, where Google automatically gave your contact information to fellow Google Buzz users who were in your contact list and vice versa. And of course, there was a big hoopla over that, and they stopped doing that as an automatic. So now, to these people who had that done, Google is coming out with a new privacy reconfirmation, if you will, and they are sending out emails to those early registrants to ask them if they still want their privacy settings set the way that they are.
I guess it's a way of preventing people that registered the first time to actually get to see the actual alert about their settings.
Exactly.
So you can either choose to share your information, share your contacts, and that kind of thing all over again.
Right.
I think most people have probably heard about the issues and changed these manually, but
yeah.
I guess it's a nice step, kind of like Facebook did a few months ago, popping up the dreaded privacy stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like an all you shouldn't have. But then again, you never know. Maybe some people haven't heard about all this.
Yeah, I still haven't quite got the excitement over Google Buzz. I just see I'm following Mashable, and Mashable just overflows because they're using it as a news reader.
Exactly.
So you basically just have to unfollow him.
Yeah. Although I follow him on Twitter. It's pretty good if it's just Twitter, but I don't deal with it with a blog.
Well, it gets a lot of comments.
Yeah, it does.
And in Google Buzz, it's not threaded to where you can actually close the topic. You actually just have to scroll and scroll and scroll until you get past all 150 comments.
But if you really love Google Buzz,
you can
then
get it on
you
your iPhone.
Just might love Buzzy, the new iPhone app, third-party developed especially for Google Buzz. If you don't have access to a web browser, you can load this app. It will authenticate you, and you will have access to your Buzz feed. You can read other people's feeds, participate in conversations, update your own status, and basically participate in Google Buzz all through this application without using the website interface.
I wonder if Apple will continue their little feud going on with Google by blocking this application at some point.
I don't know. Apparently it's $2 or $1.99 at the iTunes store, and apparently that is a promotional price, so it's probably more expensive than that. I'm not sure how this promotion, how long it's going to go on, but apparently that's only about half price. So it's, you know, not really sure if people are going to find this useful, but perhaps some people will. And you're right, Apple might nip this one in the bud. We're not sure yet.
Yeah, they've been cracking down on various applications in the iTunes store, like the sexual type things.
Yeah, they have. This isn't in any way sexual, but
no, but they're trying to really crack down. Everybody sort of thinks that maybe it's just a way of trying to clean up the image of the App Store for the upcoming iPad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not really a good thing, I don't think, for Apple to really try and do censorship and sort of close down everything.
No. Although they are so proprietary with their software that this kind of doesn't surprise me.
Well, and there's a ridiculous amount of applications out there that are still questionable.
Like the one with the farts, or, you know, like the one where, wasn't there like one called, had to do with women's female anatomy, chest wiggling, etc.
Yeah, which, I mean, it was just the name of it. The application sounded cool because you could actually upload a picture and you could touch it and make a certain portion of the screen jiggle.
I see.
But, I mean, it's kind of like last week. There was also a quack application that a guy wrote. He created an application that was nothing more than a duck quacking.
Yes.
And you could send it to friends as a ringtone. And Apple shut the door on that because it was, can't remember how they put it. It was something along the lines of it only served a single function. But there's plenty of flashlights and fart applications sitting out there that really serve no purpose.
No purpose whatsoever. Not even one function.
But speaking of Apple cracking down.
Apple is suing HTC for patent infringement. HTC makes handsets for mobile devices like cell phones, like the Nexus One Google phone handset. And Apple is alleging that HTC has infringed on at least 20 of its patents, of Apple's patents. And these patents concern things like geolocation, touchscreen interface, the amount of battery life used by the processor chip, and some other, you know, minor things. But those are the major things that the patents deal with, I think.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of things like how you can unlock the phone, you can do a pattern on the screen, or
right. There was some gesturing patents that Apple apparently had with the gestures.
But they didn't have one out there for, I guess they call it multi-touch, where you can actually sort of pinch the screen and make it zoom into the picture or whatever you're looking at. So yeah. I don't think they had that in there.
No, I don't think they did. But HTC hasn't been able to get it back any comments because as of the articles we read, they had only received notice of the filing the day of or the day before the articles we read were written. So don't know much more about it than that.
Yeah, it's one of those strange areas, again, where Apple's trying to control everything, and they're kind of trying to kill innovation, I guess.
It seems that way.
But it's kind of curious as to how long it'll take before this is actually sort of an infringement towards Google, you know, and the Android, because that's why HTC's involved in this. They're going after the hardware instead of the actual operating system.
Yeah. Although they did say it affects Windows mobile devices, too, because HTC makes those, too.
Yeah, but there's not as much touch interface with Windows mobile phones.
Well,
until the Windows 7 Series Phone 7 Classic Fuzza Wuzza.
Yeah, whatever that thing is, it's coming out
Yeah. But in accessibility news.
Yeah, more hardware news on the accessibility front. Victor, the Humanware has come out with an accessory to the Victor Reader Stream. It's called the Victor Reader Stream CD Edition. And if you're ordering it for the first time, you get a Victor Reader Stream, the power supply, and all the little accoutrements that come with a Victor Reader Stream. An additional one, it is a little CD player in which you can insert a CD containing MP3 files or a Daisy book from the Library of Congress or somewhere. And the CD player will be plugged into the Victor Reader Stream, and the stream will be able to read the book from the CD.
Will it actually rip the contents?
I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I do know that the Victor Reader Stream now has the ability to copy the contents from a National Library Service book cartridge. But I'm not sure if the CD edition will copy the contents from the CD onto the stream. Not sure about that. I don't think so. So Humanware is kind of pandering this towards people who may get these from their library, but they don't use computers a lot, or they don't, you know, to copy things onto the computer. They just want a CD to read from. You're not supposed to use a CD player other than the one that Humanware provides, although I do know someone who did. I guess he figured he had $340 more to kill, so he just tried using his Victor Reader Stream with a CD player he bought from Radio Shack, and it worked perfectly. But you shouldn't do that. It's like a little CD player with a USB connector, and you just plug it into the Victor Reader Stream, and there you go.
And they're not really increasing the cost with...
Well, they increase the cost. I mean, you have to pay for the CD accessory, which I think is like, I don't know, $50 or $60 extra, something like that.
Interesting. I don't know where their market for this is.
I don't either, because, I mean, I'm on a list that for users of the Victor Reader Stream. And we've all talked about it, and the consensus is most of us don't really understand where they're coming from. So I'm not sure.
Well, I guess the problem is that you're in a bubble. You're one of the people, along with all these other people that are on a list, and seeing as how they're on the list, they're computer savvy. Maybe this is sort of targeting people that are maybe in senior citizens' homes or something.
Well, I think that was part of it. It's targeting people who aren't very computer savvy in terms of transferring files to and from the computer.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Moving right along. More accessibility hardware news. Freedom Scientific in St. Petersburg, Florida, makers of JAWS for Windows, Magic, and various other sundries, is decreasing the price of their Focus 40 Blue Braille display from $44.95 to $27.95. And just so you don't get your hopes up, that's $4,495 down to $2,795. And this is in an attempt to promote Braille literacy. It's the Braille display itself does what similar devices of its make do now. I mean, it's got Bluetooth, it's USB, it's a 40-cell display. The $44.95 is in the ballpark of what others of the same kind of make and model cost. This price to, you know, this move to reduce the price, this will, you know, apparently, theoretically, the company thinks will make people buy more of them. And in one way, Freedom Scientific is right to do this, but there really isn't the solution to the problem. The problem is that because of technology nowadays, the way it's working with computers and all, most of the feedback that blind people that we get from computers is audio, because Braille output devices are so expensive. So most of us don't have Braille displays we can use. We rely simply on the audio. And because of this, Braille literacy itself is going down at a staggering rate. I was floored to look at the National Federation for the Blind website. They are having a campaign on Braille literacy, and they've got some statistics that are pretty disturbing, mainly that only 1 in 10 blind children are being taught Braille. That's like being taught to read, if you think about it. At least a little bit even more disturbing, 50% of blind children do not graduate high school. That was another statistic that kind of floored me. But only 10% of the children are currently being taught to read Braille. That was pretty startling. And this is totally blind children. I don't think this is, you know, partially sighted and blind. I think this totally covers only totally blind children.
Totally.
Yes. And so this move by Freedom Scientific to make this Braille display more affordable is okay. I mean, you know, Freedom Scientific is beholden for a good part of its business to government contracts. And so, yeah, maybe states will be more willing to purchase displays from them at this lower price and more willing to suggest these displays to their clients. Maybe some more people personally will purchase them. I know I was kind of tempted.
But you can wipe the drool off your mouth.
There's no drool.
There was
just a little bit.
There was the other day when you first saw that come out that it had dropped so dramatically in price.
But there are other considerations to think about too. But it's a good, okay, short-term solution, maybe, possibly. Notice all those caveats. But the best solution would be to get together and do some research and find some less expensive and less costly means of putting together these displays. There have been some research projects, but they kind of tend to peter out. Like, I heard about one as soon as we started this podcast. There was one Braille display with artificial muscles, it was called, and then I just never heard anything about it.
Well, it's a difficult market, though, because there's such a small audience for that kind of device.
Yeah, but
thus, the price is a little bit ridiculous, and a lot of times they assume that government assistance is going to pay for these.
Well, but there are cheaper ways to make these that have come about in the last, I don't know, 30 years. I mean, the technology that they use to make these is 30 years old, and there are better alternatives now, better types of technology than these, you know, individualized motors and metal pins and all this kind of stuff. But no one has taken the opportunity to develop it. And if they just put a little money into research and developing it, then they could bring the price point down and more people could afford it.
Yeah.
Well, now they, you know, only a few people can. And I mean, I talk to a lot of blind people and they say, well, I don't have a Braille display. I'd love to have one, but they're so expensive. I can't afford it.
Yeah. I mean, over $2,500 is quite a bit.
And this is $44.95.
Yeah. But, I mean, it could help out with literacy in schools and things.
Yeah,
because
that will help.
Educators will actually say, hey, we might be able to afford one of those for mm-hmm. the school system or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we will move on to
mainstream
news.
Actually,
the Pennsylvania spying webcam case has continued to develop. This is where the Lower Marion County School District was accused of spying on children via their webcams, mm-hmm. using the software for detecting stolen laptops. Apparently, the two IT staff members that have access to the software have been suspended or given...
put on paid administrative leave was, I believe, how they termed it.
Yeah, one of those ways. Who cares? Yeah,
exactly.
But they supposedly only had access and only accessed the webcams when administrators authorized it. There was also a report saying that once the webcam was activated, it would take pictures like every 15 to 20 seconds type of thing. Mm-hmm. But there's been no release of actual pictures other than just saying that they've been provided to the police.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they're saying is they put them up on a website and only the police have access to it and a couple of the school district people. And yeah, they've discontinued the use of the software, as we said before, so they have done that.
Yeah, I believe it was ANRES, A-N-R-E-S or mm-hmm. something. I guess it's kind of like LoJack that you can get for stolen laptops and such. Yeah. I hadn't heard of that one in particular. But speaking of court cases.
Yeah, speaking of privacy, a social media is now going to be exploited by your insurance companies when you file an insurance claim. Some companies are already trying to do this. It's kind of confusing, but what they're trying to do is to cull your Facebook pages and Facebook profiles to find information about you if you turn in a claim for damages. But some insurance companies want to use information from your Facebook webpage and status to learn more about you, let's say, if you turn in a claim for damages.
Well, one article that I saw was talking about how a court case, I can't remember where it was.
It was in Canada.
There was a couple of them where the insurance company actually subpoenaed the user's Facebook account, basically just asked, do you have a Facebook account? Mm-hmm. And then they were actually forced by the court to give over their Facebook credentials so that they could see what they had posted on there.
In order to, you know, for the court to even contemplate forcing someone to give over their Facebook credentials, the company has to indicate that these are going to be even relevant to their case. And I'm not seeing reason why people would even need them or want them, or what they would be used for.
Well, one thing that they were talking about was the fact that all of these people are, quote, your friends, and that could actually be considered like a character witness in a court case, where they might actually go and start questioning some of your Facebook friends as to what is the mental state of this person and what kind of things that they comment about this particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it comes down to the old fact of new media is great and everything, but it's kind of hard to figure out what's going to be said and how it's going to be used.
And it's very hard when you talk about character witnesses in a lot of cases. That kind of evidence is kind of, I mean, it's very, I don't know, the word ethereal comes to mind. I mean, it's supposed to be taken with a grain of salt. And so how this new media fits in and what kinds of things they're going to use, it's kind of difficult because, I mean, you feel like you're going to have to watch yourself every second of the day.
Well, it fits in that same area as previous weeks we had talked about the teacher in Apex that said something bad about their mm-hmm. student. They got suspended. A student in Florida says that their teacher is very bad and did something mm-hmm. stupid or whatever, and they got suspended because of that, you know, putting a big page up on Facebook. So this kind of fits in the same realm. We don't know where it's going to go.
You just feel like you have to look over your shoulder every minute, every second, every millisecond of the day.
Yep.
You can no longer be yourself anywhere you go because you're held up to censure for every little thing you do and say.
Yes, very much so. But one lady on Twitter
mm-hmm.
grabbed a whole bunch of extra followers this past week because of Conan O'Brien.
Oh, dear.
Yep, Conan O'Brien, former NBC Late Show with Conan O'Brien and the Tonight Show host, who got canned a few weeks ago, he started a Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided last week that it would be fun just to follow someone at random. So he picked a lady out of Michigan and followed her, and he tweeted about it. Well, as of this recording, this lady has over 18,900 followers because of this. Just shows the power of people that will follow. Because I believe he's got like a couple million
followers like that,
in just a month or so of having an account. Now, in a funny part of this, yesterday on the latest episode of This Week in Tech, Leo Laporte, Kevin Rose, and folks decided that it would be a funny thing to do their own. So Kevin Rose went out to Twitter search and he found someone on there that posted, "I hate technology," and found a lady named Lisa Tickled Pink. Not Tinkled, Tickled.
Lisa Tickled Pink, is it?
Yes. Okay. And everybody that was watching the show went and followed her. So right now she has almost 9,000 followers just in a day because they picked this. I went and looked a few minutes ago and she had posted something like she had locked her account because she had no clue what was going on. Mm-hmm. So must have freaked her out.
It would freak me out. Yeah.
Yeah. They were kind of laughing about it after they did it because they were kind of like, what if she's got SMS set up on her phone and she's getting dinged every time a new
follower comes in?
Yeah. Because during the episode of Twit, they had over 2,500 people sign up.
Oh God.
Or her email account, if she had a small inbox or something, was probably going to be overflowing with people. So that's just kind of a humorous thing. But yeah, she said she hated technology. She's only tweeted 3 times, so I don't know what her appeal is. The Conan O'Brien person was twitter.com/lovelybutton.
Button?
Yes.
Okay.
Like push the button.
Yes.
And that, and on Twit, they speculated that just the name that she has might cause people to follow her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that means there are secondary connotations there or not.
I'm not certain. That one passes me by.
But there could be.
Speaking of connotations. Paraben has come out with something new and innovative, and a little disturbing, the Porn Detection Stick. Available for $99 at your local retailer.
Yes, it is a USB stick that will search your computer and look for naughty pictures, as it were, or educational materials that you might be collecting out there.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, it will look for flesh tones, backgrounds,
facial features, and body shapes.
Yes.
It does not search video, only images, I believe.
It's only images. They said that if you had a 500 gig hard drive, it could take an hour and a half. It's simply a flash drive that you insert into a USB port, and boom, it's off and searching.
One other thing, if you've got those images on there and you think, oh, I'll just delete them, that won't work. It'll still find them.
Exactly. But I mean, usually when you delete things, you can still technically find them.
Right.
I one time had a computer that all of a sudden decided it wanted to delete a folder. Mm-hmm. And I found an application on the internet that actually allowed me to see what it had deleted because it hadn't been overwritten by the system yet.
Did you get it back?
Yeah, got it back.
Oh, cool.
It was educational materials.
Oh, I see. And speaking of getting things back. What were you thinking? Yeah, some dude apparently was involved in a strange little scheme whereby he and a couple friends went and somehow got the credit card numbers off of the magnetic strips from ATM machines somehow.
I guess they were doing sort of a skimming scheme, which is where they put a little apparatus on an ATM slot where you actually put your card and it will mm-hmm. read the magnetic strips mm-hmm. when you insert your card.
Well, anyway, apparently they saved it on a Kingston flash drive, and they were in the, where were they, police station or airport security or somewhere with this evidence about this scam and these defendants around, and they were asking him questions, and this dude swallowed the flash drive in front of them right there, I suppose in an effort to keep the evidence to himself. But I have to say, what was he thinking? Because he had to have known that sooner or later it would have to come back out.
Well, and I mean, it could be toxic, for mm-hmm. God's sake. But Kingston said that they had not had anyone ever do this, so they were not quite sure what the physical implications would be.
Yes.
But after four days, it wanted out, and he couldn't get rid of it himself, so he agreed to go to the hospital for this. No speculations were made on how this procedure took place.
And no speculations were made as to whether the data was actually retrievable. Some people speculated in the article I read that his stomach acids may have acted to corrupt the data on the flash drive.
I don't know, but
oh, God.
People swallow drugs. They swallow all sorts of things for magic tricks and stuff.
Little kids swallow frogs and turtles and stuff, and some guy has to swallow a flash drive.
It is amazing the people that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of people that are out there, in a previous episode of The Tech Guy with Leo Laporte, episode number 641, he had a caller on his national radio show on the Premier Networks call in with questions about her Wi-Fi access that she has in her home.
And listen to this.
We thought we would play this because it has turned into sort of a meme that has spread around the internet and on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer's our next caller in Long Beach, California. Hi, Jennifer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes. Hi. Am I on?
Hi. You are on.
Hi. For over a year and a half in my apartment, I was able to connect through wireless the Linksys, and that's mm-hmm. disappeared now for about 3 weeks. So I bought the USB, I'm working on Vista Basic on an HP laptop. And so I bought the Linksys wireless extender with the N mm-hmm. standard, mm-hmm. and I'm finding it's not solved the problem at all.
So you have, let me just, silly question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. You have a wireless access point to begin with.
Well, it disappeared, so I'm trying to.
But you own one, right?
No. No,
okay.
No, I am a wireless
okay.
thief.
Okay. So you, okay.
Yeah, that's right. She admitted that she's a wireless thief.
Exactly.
It wasn't such a dumb question. So if you want Wi-Fi, you have to contract with an internet service provider.
Well, Comcast, I know that. Did you do that? No, I connected.
You were using somebody else.
Servers.
You were using somebody else's Wi-Fi.
Not uncommon.
Not
for
legal.
Internet users.
No. So this person probably caught on and turned it off.
But it's not. No, it was a Linksys in my neighborhood. Yes, they probably did.
Oh, Jennifer, it was a neighbor's wireless internet. They set it up and they didn't realize that they were broadcasting it publicly.
Okay, well, for over a year and a half.
They caught on, or they moved, or they turned it off, or they renamed it. You know, what I tell everybody who has wireless internet, wireless access point is turn on something called WPA2 encryption. You will require a password. Then your neighbors will not see you. If you were a bad guy, you could have gotten on their network and you have access to all their systems.
But I don't. I just access it.
But there might be other people in the neighborhood who were. So, in fact, you were at great risk as well using this Linksys.
Firewall or my.
No. You are on an unprotected network. You are doing the most dangerous thing you could do.
I take that risk. I do all my banking. I'm taking that
risk. You take that risk because you're cheap, Jennifer. You're going to have to buy internet access.
Cheap. She's crazy.
She's a nutcase.
Now keep in mind, Leo's wife's name is Jennifer.
Mm. Yes, I know.
This is true. I'm not.
I'm sorry. And buying the wireless extender is not the solution. You need to go to an internet service provider. and say, I want to buy internet access and hook up your own Wi-Fi, it'll work great.
Yeah, well, they should bring that cost down.
Oh, for God's sake.
$14.95 from DSL Extreme a month. But, I mean, you know, that's like somebody saying, yeah, I steal from the grocery store because food is so expensive. It's still stealing. So you're borrowing. Look, I've done this from time to time. You need a quick hit on your email and you're driving around. There's open access point. They're all named Linksys. When you see an access point named Linksys, it's kind of usually means the person who set it up was kind of clueless and just plugged it in and went. They didn't change the name, didn't do anything. It could also be, though, Jennifer, it really could be somebody malicious setting up a Wi-Fi access point and watching what you're doing. Now, your banking's safe because it's encrypted. But maybe, here, I'll give you an example. This happens all the time. You get your email from, you know, Hotmail or Google or whatever. And now, the good news is Google's changed their system, so you cannot get it unencrypted. But many other systems, and Google in the early days, allowed you to send your login and password through the air unencrypted, which means that anybody else on that Linksys router, not just the guy who set it up, but anybody else in your neighborhood on that router, could see your email password floating through, catch it, and now they've got access to your email. In fact, first thing I would do right now is change all of your unencrypted passwords. You know, if you've done anything without encryption, you want to change it because those have all been sent through the airwaves publicly for the last year and a half. So now, if I have access to your email, I can do all sorts of things. For instance, I can go to your bank and say, "Oh yeah, I'm changing my password," and they'll say, "Well, we have to confirm this through your email, right?" Uh-oh. They can capture your email. They can do anything. They can watch what you're doing. They can get other passwords. They can get your logins. You could be totally compromised. And if the person is clever and wants to maintain the connection, will not ever do anything that would let you know. They just sit there and smile. So it's dangerous for you to use it. It's technically illegal. It's wire fraud. You know, I mean, people have been arrested for it. I don't think it's, you know, it's certainly it's wrong, right? Because you're using somebody else's resource. They paid for it. You're borrowing it. Now, you might say, well, they didn't block me. They're not required to block you. But and what probably happened is that they did. They wised up. Somebody told them. Or they moved. You don't even know who it is. Maybe they moved. Maybe it broke. Nowadays, everybody, there's all these things floating through the air. And, you know, you can grab them. It's not safe to do it. I would recommend just, you know, DSL Extreme, one of our sponsors, is $14.95 a month. It's pretty cheap. You already spent more than that on the Wi-Fi extender. The Wi-Fi extender will not help you if they went away or locked it down.
Now, it would help if you actually bought enough Wi-Fi extenders so that you could continue to increase your bandwidth strength until you found someone else with
the Wi-Fi. Yeah, yeah. Okay, we've done enough of this. This is enough. You're way too obsessed with Leo for healthiness.
Yeah. But you have to admit, that is pretty funny.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The fact that she admits she's stealing it.
Oh, yeah.
She's not one of these oblivious people that thinks, oh, there's internet. I don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. Good Lord.
I thought she was, and then I listened to it again, and I was like, you've got to be kidding. She knew.
What he should have done was said, well, maybe you should move next to a Starbucks.
Yeah, and you know, what this proves is there's no such thing as a silly question.
Not at all. And when it comes to technology, there's lots of questions.
And they can all seem silly, but you better ask them.
So whenever people are out there thinking of stealing their internet, just think of poor old Jennifer that had her internet just taken away from her.
The poor thing.
Probably just all of this, you know, maybe it was that Kingston guy, you know. He had to go pass his, he had to go pass away his Kingston flash drive and moved away.
Well, anyway, on that very shaky note, we're going to conclude today. This has gone on way too long.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So we would like to encourage you to contact us. If you have any questions or comments, to view the stories that we considered, it's delicious.com/techaccess.
And you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/TA_weekly.
And the instructions for visiting our website and emailing us and voicemailing us are at the end of the podcast.
All comments are welcome.
Mm-hmm. And appreciated. So we will sign off for this evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.